Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, June 15th, 2008, and this is show number 156. Well, I've been on travel all week, had to be in Boston, of all places, during the Laker game. It was horrible. That was on Tuesday, and worse yet, I missed the fourth game because I was on the plane on the way back. But the real tragedy of the week was that I was on a plane during WWDC. If you haven't gotten enough WWDC yet, check out the Mac Roundtable for this week. It was really fun to hear the other guys talk about it, even if I didn't get to hear it live myself. Well, how I did hear it, though, was kind of fun. I got off the plane in Boston, and I rushed to the hotel, and I whipped open my laptop, but of course the internet service to Apple.com was absolutely dreadful. Everything was taking forever to load. So I decided to strike out on my own and find the Apple store in Boston. But I didn't have a car. The guy at the front desk tried to convince me that I could take the train, that it was easy. Oh, yeah, right. He says, first you walk two blocks away, and then you pick up the Silver Line. That takes you into South Street. Get off and take the Green Line. Get off of Copley, or was it the Red Line to the South Street? Get off of the Green Line at Copley. I have no idea, but he circled a whole bunch of stuff on a little map, and he swore to me that even I would be able to do this because he was able to teach his mom to ride the subway. And I asked him if she came back alive, and he said yes. So if she could survive it, I thought I could pull it off too. Now, those of you living in normal cities with functioning public transportation are sitting there with a confused look on your face, like, what's wrong with her? She can't ride the train? But you really need to understand that in LA, we drive everywhere. I mean everywhere. We technically have a subway somewhere, I think. I don't know. I heard they were working on one, but I've never seen it. And we have sort of a little green line, red line sort of thing around here that I rode once just for entertainment. But it's not real public transportation. I mean, you can't even count on it to run in the, you know, on the weekends, for example. The only time I've ever successfully ridden the subway before was when Lindsay's friend Mari insisted that we could do it when we were in San Francisco together. And we lived through that, so I decided to give it a try. And I did it all by myself. I got off the last subway and I trotted down the street and I found the hugest Apple store in the entire United States. This thing is three stories tall and just one floor is at least triple the size of the Apple store that I go to near my house. I found a real nice guy named Nick and I asked him to reenact the entire keynote for me. Luckily, he was really nice and there was hardly anybody in the Apple store. Probably because they'd all planned on going to buy the new iPhone, but since there was no new iPhone to buy, everybody stayed home. Well, I got the entire lowdown, and I think in some ways it might have been more fun just to hear it from him. Well, after I bothered him for about an hour, I took a whole bunch of pictures of the store, and then I had a delightful dinner in town. You know, one of those things where you say, I just want to stop at a cafe and have a burger and a beer sitting outside and watch the people go by. It was just like that. I had a great waitress, really nice people sitting around me that I bothered. This girl next to me had just bought a Nikon D40 and she wasn't sure it was a good camera. And so I spent a bunch of time teaching her about it. And it turned out her husband's a Mac fanatic. So I forced my card on her. And then she gave me a little, one of those little socks for your iPod Nano. She gave me one of the little sockies and it says Boston 5/15/2008 on it. So that was kind of cool. Anyway, I just had a really nice time sitting outside there watching the people go by. Well, the lighting there was just beautiful by that time. It kind of reddish tones on the Trinity Church and the building surrounding it. It was just one of those magical times of the evening, and it was warm. It was just gorgeous. So I put those pictures up on Flickr, even though I hate Flickr, Bart. And I got the pictures of the Apple store and the surrounding area. So if you want to take a look at my pictures of the area, click on the Apple logo in the show notes, and you can see my see all my pictures. Well, I want to tell you guys about something important here. One thing I've built into the podcast, that I've built the podcast on, is trust between you and me. I only tell you I like stuff if I really do like it. If I think something's lame, I may be polite to the developer and try to be constructive to the manufacturer, but I'll still tell you if I think it's lame. Unless they're snots, in which case I'm not polite at all. But in general, I try to be constructive and say, well, they could improve by doing blah, blah, blah. Well, I'd like to tell you about the gadgets, or I've always liked to tell you about the gadgets I acquire, and usually the easiest way to show you the product I'm talking about is to throw in an Amazon link in the show notes. I just tend to find that's the first link that comes up, so I've just been throwing Amazon in all along. Well, I've been pretty much doing that ever since I started the show. Last week, I got a very interesting email from, I hope I pronounce this right, Riza Pazuki, who used to work for Amazon. He told me that instead of putting regular links in my show notes, I could join the Amazon Associates program And then if you click on the links to the products I show, and by some chance you actually bought the product while you were there, I would get a small percentage of the sales. So without hardly changing anything but the formatting of the link and the way it looks in the show notes, I could keep giving you the same info I've always been giving you, and I could get a little money to help fund the podcast and my incessant desire for more gadgets. Well, I spent a lot of time in the past pulling up images anyway, which were usually from Amazon, so I may get lazy and include the picture and pricing in the link when I put them up. They make it so easy to do it that way. I did want to tell you about the change, full disclosure here, because I always want to be able to keep your trust. But it's okay with me if you get out there and click my links and buy some stuff from Amazon. That would be fun, too. Well, good friend of the show, Donald Burr, sent in a review about the Snowflake microphone ages ago, and I've had so much to say in the show that I have not had time to play it. I promised myself I'd make time this time by putting it first up in the show notes. Here's Donald.
Hi there, Donald Burr here, frequent contributor to the Mozillacast as of late, here today with a review of the Blue Snowflake microphone, which is an ultra-portable, very easy-to-carry microphone from Blue Microphone. You may have heard of the Blue Microphone Company. They make very cool, unusual design microphones, and are probably most famous in the podcaster circle for their Blue Snowball microphone, which is a really uniquely designed USB microphone that has gained a lot of traction in the podcasting community. Anyways, the Snowflake was announced late last year. I first heard about it at the podcast expo. I heard some people talking about it, and I started seeing teasers out on around various websites about the thing. What it is it's a small, very portable USB microphone. And I was looking for something exactly like this. I've been using the Blue Snowball, which is pretty portable because it has both the microphone and the USB interface built into the same body. But still, it's pretty big and doesn't fit in my laptop bag. I usually have to carry it in my suitcase or a separate bag. Before that, I was using something even bigger. I was using a standard XLR microphone hooked up to an M-Audio Fast Track interface, which is, you know, consists of several pieces of equipment, various cables, and it was really quite bulky and hard to carry around with me. I do an anime podcast, Otaku no Podcast, and I often go to anime conventions, and I like to do some recording while I'm at the convention, because it's easier, you know, while I'm there, while the events of the day are still fresh in my mind, to get recording done before, you know. Otherwise, I come home, I forget, you know, half the things that happened, and it's just a big mess. Anyways, so I've been looking for a more portable USB microphone solution, and it sounded like the Snowflake fit the bill perfectly. Anyways, just last week, I happened to be at my local Apple store, and lo and behold, I saw a couple of Blue Snowflakes on the shelf. I grabbed one that very afternoon, and since that time, they've been out of stock. These things are moving very fast. BSW, which is the big online audio gear reseller, has them listed, but delivery dates are like several weeks out, so these things are moving like hotcakes. The Snowflake is a portable USB microphone, like I said earlier. It uses a pressure gradient condenser transducer, and it has the USB audio circuitry built into it. The microphone is a cardioid pattern, which means basically it only picks up stuff directly in front of the microphone, which is good because then you don't pick up, you know, background noise in the room or anything like that. It has a sample rate of 44.1 kilohertz at 16 bits. Frequency response is 35 hertz to 20 kilohertz. This thing is very small. The dimensions are 3.5 inches by 2.5 inches, and at its thickest point, it's only about 1.5 inch thick. It's also very cheap, with prices anywhere from $60 to $70 online. The way this thing looks is kind of hard to describe, so I'll be putting some pictures up on my .Mac web gallery, so check those out. Basically, the mic itself is roughly the size and shape of a golf ball. That's the actual capsule that contains both the microphone and the audio USB audio circuitry. It's mounted on a swivel joint, which is attached to a combination desk stand and case. The USB interface uses a mini B type cable, which is commonly used with mobile phones, digital cameras and such. It's nice that they went with a standard kind of connector for this, because I already had several USB cables with this kind of connector, although they do include a USB cable in the box. The stand that it comes with is very ingenious, and I think is a really cool design. It can be used in several modes. First of all, you can fold it out and use it as a desk stand, so you can actually sit the microphone on your desk. But it also acts as a clip that lets you clip the microphone to your monitor. Now, this doesn't work with all monitors. My desktop LCD monitor was a bit too thick for it. However, it works just fine on my laptop's monitor, my PowerBook screen. It should also work with any other laptop, say an iBook or even Gasp, a PC laptop. To compare the sound quality of this mic, I recorded several samples using both the Snowflake as well as the Blue Snowball that I also own and the M-Audio Fast Track gear that I used previously. So here I will present three different audio samples. This recording is being made using a Shure 8900 microphone hooked up to an M-Audio Fast Track USB audio interface. And this recording is being made using the Blue Snowball microphone. And finally, this recording is being made using the Blue Snowflake microphone. As you can see, the sound of the Snowflake doesn't quite have that deep punchiness of the Snowball or the M-Audio, and it also seems to pick up a little more of the room's ambient noise. However, I think these are reasonable trade-offs considering the ultra-portability of this mic. This mic's USB interface is standard USB audio class, so it'll work on PCs and Macs, probably even Linux too, with no special drivers required. I've used it in all of the various Mac recording softwares, including GarageBand, Audacity, Peak, Audio Hijack, Wiretap Studio, and more. Works just fine. I cannot stress how extremely portable this mic is. It easily fits in my already overcrowded laptop bag, and the USB cable it comes with folds up and conveniently stores in the case of the microphone itself, so you don't need to carry the USB cable separately. It feels very solidly built. I think this mic is great for the podcaster who needs to be able to record on the go and not have to lug around a whole bunch of gear with them. It's also great for, say, students who are recording lectures, videographers who want to do quick voiceovers while they're recording video in the field, you know, that sort of thing. The super portability of this mic really lends itself well to these applications. So in summary, what I like about the thing is it's got pretty good sound quality. It's extremely portable. The build quality on this is pretty good. It's pretty solidly built with one minor caveat, which I'll get to in a minute. It uses the standard USB mini B type cable, so if you happen to lose the cable that it came with, you can easily get a cheap replacement at almost any computer store. The stand that it comes in is very versatile and also acts as a carrying case. It doesn't require special drivers, and it's very affordable. Now, there are a few things that do bother me somewhat about this. These are all mostly minor points. When you use the stand as a desk stand, it isn't terribly high. So if you're particularly tall or if your desk is particularly low, you might have to stick a book or a software box or something under the microphone to bring it up more towards your proper height. The monitor clip, as I mentioned earlier, does not work with all monitors. Most laptop displays and some of the thinner LCD flat panels should work just fine, but you know, some of the older, thicker LCDs may not fit those. It doesn't have the special omnidirectional or negative 10 dB pad modes the Snowball mic has. And finally, the hinge that I mentioned earlier. I worry that the hinge that might weaken over time. It's pretty solid right now, but once I bumped into the table while I had the mic sitting on it, and this hinge sort of flapped shut, of course, you know, bumping into the table and knocking the mic isn't, you know, you wouldn't want to do that anyways, because then you'd, but still, you know, over time, I worry that the hinge might, you know, start to really loosen up so that it doesn't hold its rigidity, you know, over time. But those are two minor points, and, you know, they don't really take away from my extreme satisfaction with this product. I give it 4 out of 5 stars. I'm really liking this mic, and it's going to have a permanent home in my laptop bag.
Well, thanks, Donald. That was a great review, as always. I really enjoy your reviews. Always get a kick out of it. And like talking to you one-on-one, too. That's always been fun. Well, Donald wanted me to remind everybody, you forgot to point it out, but he did that recording using the Snowflake, and it sounded pretty good. Maybe not as good as his regular microphone, but sure, for a portable one, that's fantastic. I also put a link in the show notes to his... he made a gallery of photos, so you can check it out and see what the Snowflake looks like hooked up next to his on his laptop and that sort of thing. You can also see just how much caffeine Donald requires to keep up and going. I got a kick out of that. Well, I have a good segue here. I met a really nice guy named Vlad at the conference I attended this week. Even though he's a Celtics fan, I'm not going to hold that against him. He was very gracious and let me watch the Laker game in the in a bar in Boston. So I was a little worried I'd get beat up or something, but he was very nice. Anyway, he sent me a link to his blog and I was reading through it. And his blog is at noworriesbut.blogspot.com. And in one of his blog posts, I found he had a link to a really cool Facebook application. Well, one of the fun features of Facebook is that if your friends choose to list their birthdays in Facebook, you get notified in your news feed. Well, this is cool, but only useful if your crazy Facebook hound, like some people I know who shall remain unnamed, but perhaps live in my actual house. Well, what if you aren't like that and you don't look at Facebook every single day and you miss a critical birthday? Enter the application FB Cal. It's a Facebook application that creates a calendar with all of your friends' birthdays that you can subscribe to using iCal, or if you have some other application that allows subscriptions to calendars. I installed the application, gave it permission to have access to my Facebook account, and then it gave me a URL to just simply copy and paste into the iCal subscriptions window. Suddenly, I have a calendar that I can turn on and off, showing all of my friends' Facebook friends' birthdays. I thought it was really cool. It was especially cool because it automatically updated as I add and remove friends from Facebook or as they add or remove their birthdays. Heck, it was so cool. I just noticed that Donald Burr's birthday is a week from Tuesday. Happy birthday, Donald. Did you read Mad Magazine when you were a little kid? I sure did. I just loved it. Well, if you did, you probably read things written by Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer. He's so named because he has articles in more consecutive copies of Mad Magazine than anyone else. Turns out he's got a penchant for gadgets, and if they're silly, they hold even more of an attraction for them, because he's kind of a silly guy. Well, Dick is selling a gadget that is not only silly, it's incredibly useful. He's selling an LED hat. It's basically just a baseball cap with a fine-looking gizwiz.biz logo on it, but it's got two really, really, really bright LEDs sewn into the brim. This may sound like a goofy idea, and, well, it is kind of goofy, but it's amazingly useful. I'm sure of this because I bought one of Dick's silly LED hats, and it's fantastic. So here's the setup. Gotta have a problem to be solved, right? How many times are you digging around behind some electronics, trying to see a connector or determine where some wires go? You're looking for your Ethernet jack, or you're trying to plug in your TiVo? And if you're really lucky, you've got somebody else holding a flashlight and maybe a mirror to try to see back there, but the light is never quite in the right place. You've all been there, right? Well, imagine if everywhere you looked, the light was in the right place all the time. Well, that's what happens with the Gizwiz hat. Since it's on your actual head, you look, there's light. It's amazingly cool. Now, some people might think I look like an idiot wearing it, but I don't care. It's amazingly useful. I decided to do a testimonial video and send it to Dick himself so he could really understand how much I love it. So I posted that video on YouTube, and I thought you guys might get a kick out of it too. I embedded a link to it in the show notes, so go check that out. Hey, I wanted to tell you guys, remind you that if you're not busy at 5 p.m. on Sunday nights, that's GMT minus 8, come on over to ustream.tv/nosillacast and watch me record the show live. We get a bunch of fun people in there every week, and we have a great time. The best part for me is how much I learn when I'm doing it. At first, all I did was just fling on the EyeSight camera and let people see my lovely mug on screen while I'm yapping away into the microphone recording. But then Elliot Bowles from ElliotMediaGroup.com told me that I could make it much more interesting for people if they could also see my screen while I was working, especially, you know, if I'm just editing in GarageBand and I'm not even recording. The application to do this is called CamTwist from, this is going to be tough to pronounce, Allocinit, AllocInit.com. Of course, there's a link in the show notes. Anyway, CamTwist is free, too. It's kind of funky to drive, but it lets me do a bunch of cool things. At the very least, it can do the screen capture, which is way more interesting than watching me, but it also lets me do picture-in-picture so the people who come to watch, they get the best of both worlds. They get to see my face and my screen. We took it up a notch last Sunday and started adding special effects. They can be really silly. The one we settled on was a halo over my head in the picture-in-picture so everyone would know what an angel I am. Check out the screenshot in the show notes that we captured. I think you'll get a kick out of it. Anyway, you should come on over at 5 p.m. GMT minus 8 on Sunday nights, or sometimes a little bit early, and join in the fun. I'm telling you, while I'm making this actual recording, I've got a bunch of people in there, and luckily they were screaming at me in the chat, "Your audio's gone to garbage. It sounds horrible." So I stopped just to chat with them. And sure enough, it was, I don't know what had gone wrong. Something funny with my M audio, we expect, because it was really, really crackly. So instead of recording for a half an hour and having this big, nasty mess you'd have to listen to and me being really depressed, we have a nice, clean recording. And now I'm watching them right now to see if they're having any problems with the audio. Well, I'd like you to think about the people you can trust in your life. Think about when you're in a mess of some kind, who do you look to? Who do you know you can depend on to come to your aid? With any luck, it's someone in your family, or more probably, it might be a friend with whom you have a deep bond. If you're really lucky in life, there's several people to whom you could turn. I have a few friends I know I can depend on if I'm in a crisis, and one of those friends is Honda Bob. I know you're thinking Allison's finally got off her rocker, but I really feel that way. This week, my daughter was caught in a situation very far from home. She had a car problem and had to have her car towed. It was pretty clear to me from the story that she might be being taken advantage of. Well, I told her to hang up from calling me and call Honda Bob instead. It wasn't that Bob could actually fix the problem. It was that I trusted him to protect my daughter from fraud and to take care of her. I told him he could even pretend to be her dad on the phone if he wanted to, whatever would help the most. Well, things got sorted out, but I was mostly left with one phrase to describe Bob: an honorable man. I don't know how many people can say that about their mechanic, but I can. If you're lucky enough to live in the LA or Orange County areas and you'd like to have your Honda or Acura car taken care of by an honorable man, give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or shoot him an email over at hdabob@aol.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Ben Frixel sent in the best tip ever. Okay, maybe not the best tip ever, but for me, it's totally awesome. Here's what he wrote. "Hey, Allison, I know that you love reverse Polish notation. I also know how you love finding applications that can do it. I just found an app that I assume you have used that has the reverse Polish notation as a hidden feature. This app is currently on your Mac, as it is with all new Macs. That's right, Mac OS X calculator has RPM built right in the calculator. Just push Command R, and there's an RPM mode under the View menu as well. Thanks, Ben Frixel." I am so stoked about this. Of course, I still love LXVII, which is pronounced 67, for the full functionality of the HP 67. But for a quick addition problem, even I can use the built-in calculator now without using that stupid straightforward method. Even cooler, I quit the calculator, and when I went back to it, it stayed in RPM mode. Thanks, Ben. This is awesome. You've heard me talk about the software Feeder from time to time, from reinventedsoftware.com. I'm sure you've heard me talk about it, but if you've forgotten, it's a software I use to create my podcast show notes. I put in all the links and images with it. It's a great little HTML editor. And I actually, of course, create the feed itself that you use to subscribe to the show. I put in images into the links, and I put in all the iTunes ID3 tags, all the stuff that makes it a great product when you get it. Well, this software rocks, and it's all because of the incredible attentiveness of the developer, Steve Harris. This guy is amazing. When I did the first episode of podcast on podcasting, I couldn't get the darn thing to work for nothing. I could not get it to feed. I went over and over and over everything I was doing, and I showed it to other people, and nobody could help me figure it out. I couldn't figure out why it would let the episode would show up, and it would sort of download, but then it wouldn't play. It was making me nuts. After 5 days of working on that while I was on travel, I finally broke down and asked Steve for help. I think it was maybe 15 minutes before he responded. He asked me to send him my feeder file. Then he wrote back just minutes later, pointing out that I had an MP3 in the link instead of an M4A designator in the link. I changed that link and boom, it was feeding and it was awesome. It worked great. I couldn't believe how helpful this guy was. Well, another thing I do is I create in my show notes, I create the text of what I'm going to send to Tim Forporten of the Mac Review Cast. I create that in a separate feeder file. Well, the last thing I have to do is copy all of it, paste it into another program like Text Wrangler, and then save that out as an HTML file. So I asked it, Steve. I said, you know, it would be really cool if I could save as HTML. And I said, maybe I'm the only one who wants that, though. Well, he wrote back, and he says, yeah, I'll send you the only one who wants that. So I created an Apple script for you that will automatically take the episode you've selected and change it into an HTML file. Can you believe that? This guy is astonishing. I mean, he just did it for me. Just like said, oh, I'll just make her a little Apple script, get her off my back. I love Steve Harris. You rock, dude. It's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from bartbouchatz.ie. How are you today, Bart?
I am fine, apart from the fact that I'm still coughing and spluttering because I apparently have a hypersensitivity or something. I don't even know what it means, but I have it.
Well, as long as it's got a name, I'm sure you feel a lot better now.
Yeah, well, I think the doctor is sort of guessing at the moment. He said, well, I think this might be it. So how's about you take these steroids for a month and then come back to me? So we'll see what happens.
At least it's something different.
Yeah, steroids versus antibiotics. You know, it make me less nauseous anyway.
I guess so. Well, it is nice to have your broadband good. That's all I really care about, you know.
I've actually gotten used to having it. It's broadband has done what it always should have done. It's just become this little thing in the background that just happens.
Yeah.
You know, my computer is magically connected to the internet, and I completely forget about how it's done. And that's how broadband should be.
Just like electricity or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's see. I wanted to start the show out today about why I still hate Flickr.
Shock and or horror, but carry on.
Okay, so last week I was in Boston, and I landed in Boston after WWDC had taken place, and I wanted to know what had happened, so I rushed to my computer at the hotel, and I had terrible internet connections, and so I couldn't even get Apple.com to load, much less even think about watching the keynote. So I figured, okay, it'll be faster to actually jump on the train and go down to the Back Bay and go to the Apple store there. So that actually was a great experience because I don't do trains. I don't know how to do this stuff. I mean, in L.A., we all drive cars. If you go three blocks, you get in your car to do it. So the guy at the hotel convinced me. He said, I taught my mother how to ride the train, so I'm sure you can do it. So I had to take three separate trains. It was very exciting. And I was very proud of my little self as I marched down the street and found the Apple store. The one in Boston is the biggest Apple store in the country. And this thing was gorgeous. It was huge. One story of it was at least 3 to 4 times as big as the one that's by my house. And it was 3 stories tall. Just spectacular. But there was nobody in it. So I figured it was because there was nothing to buy, right? I figured
that. Well, everyone expected to be buying the next day.
Yeah, right. So, or at least that afternoon, maybe they think they would get to go there, but there was nothing new to buy, so what the heck. But I found this guy named Nick, and I said, all right, Nick, just do a play-by-play. I want you to reenact the whole thing for me. And he did. He was really cute. Had a lot of fun. But I took a whole bunch of pictures of the Apple store. And then I went and had a beer and a sandwich outside in an outdoor cafe, watched the people, you know, played on Twitter while I did that, took my iPhone out to dinner, had a great time. And the sun was just starting to set and the colors were just fantastic on all the architecture there. So I went around, I took a whole bunch of pictures like of the Trinity Church, and there's a building, a brand new or a fairly new building that was built. It's an all glass building. They did it all glass so that it would reflect the old architecture around it, which is, it's really effective. Got all these great pictures. I thought, all right, I'm going to go back to my hotel. I'm going to upload them to Flickr. About half of them went through.
Yeah, but that's because your hotel's broadband was poo.
Well, yeah, but why half of them? I mean, it was like, and so now under normal circumstances, okay, like I also uploaded them to Facebook, and I still had some trouble with Facebook also because I was having trouble with the internet access, but I can put them in the right order when I'm done. Now they're all in the wrong order because I haven't even gone back and put the missing ones up on Flickr. If I put them in, it's going to be Apple Store, then Trinity Church, then Apple Store, then this reflective building, then back to the Apple Store. It's going to be a big mess in my photo stream.
Yeah, but don't worry about it. Your photo stream is just a heap. It's put it into sets. That's what matters. That's what applies the order. But photo stream is chaos. It's meant to be chaos. Just don't worry about it. Let it be.
Yeah, but isn't it, most people, if they go to my Flickr site, aren't they just going to flip through the photo stream? Isn't that what you normally do when you go to somebody's site?
Well, if you click on the first picture that looks interesting, see what set it belongs to or what group it belongs to, and look at all the other ones that are related. That's sort of the normal workflow.
I haven't noticed that.
Your stream is meant to be a great big mess. It's just a heap. That's actually a computer science term, believe it or not. It is just a heap. It has no structure. Structure is applied in the sets. I know.
Don't like that. It's annoying. Oh, so by the way, I was doing it through the web, and I thought, okay, well, let me switch to the uploader. And the uploader just simply said, no, you can't use the uploader because you're not on the internet. But I could go back to the web, and it would work. Yeah. So before I had trouble with the web one not working and the uploader working. Now the uploader just said, you're not on the internet. And I kept refreshing it, double checking. I'm really online. That didn't work. So that was really annoying. And then, let's see, somebody sent me a subscribe to my stream. So I wanted to go look at their site. And so I went over to them on my iPhone. And you taught me how to hover over the avatar to get the little pull down to come down so that I could add them to my list of contacts. Only I couldn't hover over it on the iPhone, so I couldn't figure out how to get how to add them to my list.
Well, you can do that if you go to their profile and there'll be a button over in the corner that says add whatever the person's name is as a contact.
Well, I didn't see it. Didn't work. So Wizard Chimp says I should try Smug Mug next.
So does Leo Laporte.
Oh, really? Yeah. I have played with Smug Mug a long time ago, and it seemed to be pretty fun. I kind of liked it.
It looks pretty shiny, because when Leo was in Slowbart, he put all his stuff on Smug Mug, and I had a look around, and it looked very shiny. But to me, the important thing about Flickr is the community. That's what I use it for all the time. To me, Flickr is a bulletin board system for photographs, and I use it entirely for the purpose of taking part in communities. So Smug Mug can't compete with that in my book.
I got to find some communities.
Yeah, definitely. That's where all the fun is. One of our listener, Martin, has made it over into the critique forum that I'm on. So yourself and Martin aren't seeing more of each other in there. That's where all the fun is. Because if you want to make your pictures look really nice on the web, set up your own website, use JAlbum, whatever. It's the communities that make Flickr.
JAlbum has communities, by the way. I don't understand them yet, but I was thinking about learning about them someday.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, we actually had topics for today, other than ranting about our old topic, a recurring theme.
Well, people do like it when we argue, though.
That's true. I think we're going to be quite conciliatory for the rest.
So we decided that, or you were telling me some of the interesting stuff that did come out of WWDC about Snow Leopard, and that's something not a lot of people have been talking about.
Yeah, I have to say I've gotten a little bored with everyone talking about iPhone. I was a bit disappointed the entire keynote was iPhone. Yeah, it's cool. We get it. I want to buy one. It rocks. Actually, I'm going to buy one. But, you know, enough already. So I figured, you know, Snow Leopard has snuck in under everyone's radar, so we may as well talk about it. That way we won't be the same as everyone else.
So do we know anything about Snow Leopard, though, other than kind of an interesting name?
We know tidbits. We have a couple of sources. Apple have made a few press releases. So that
we should say what Snow Leopard is.
It's the next version of OS 10. So 10.6 will become Snow Leopard, like 10.5 is Leopard.
There we go.
So there's been a few actual press releases, which is definitely factual. There's been a couple of leaks, and there's been a few rumors. So that's what kind of all we have to go on. But the press releases are most interesting.
Now,
so
there, I mean, did the developers actually get Snow Leopard?
Yep. And okay. They got a whole big session on it given by Bertrand Serlet, who's Apple's senior vice president of that kind of stuff. So they got a great big doohickey and they were told all the cool stuff about it. And they know way more than we do, but it's all covered under NDA.
That's a non-disclosure agreement, huh?
Yep. So they know stuff and we don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I hate that. It's like, you know, because Steve Jobs mentioned it in this keynote. He said, oh, and by the way, this afternoon session is going to be all about Snow Leopard. But this afternoon session was entirely covered by NDA. So I was really waiting for the news to come out and waiting for the news to come out. And then I realized it was under NDA. It's like, no.
That's me.
But anyway, what we do know is that you might notice that Snow Leopard sounds awfully similar to Leopard.
Yeah.
And this is actually a very cunning name by Apple because their theory for Snow Leopard is that they're not going to do mad, insane new features like we got with Leopard. So nothing as new and revolutionary as Spaces or Time Machine or Quick Look or any of that. Instead, they're going to concentrate on making it more efficient, more stable, and just quicker, smaller, faster, better.
But an extra $100 for that?
We have no idea about pricing. No mention has been made whatsoever about pricing. So whether on one extreme they could go for the 10.1 model and give it away for free, on the other extreme they could charge us the full whack for it. We have no idea.
Hmm. Okay.
What we do know is that although they're saying they're not adding any new features, what they mean is they're not adding very many new features for us regular users. They are doing an awful lot of stuff under the hood. Hmm. What they have talked about that we know about for absolute certain is a new technology which they've codenamed Grand Central. And this is some sort of cool API thing, which is going to make it really easy for developers to write their applications so they can work on multiple cores. Because at the moment, that's really hard. The parallel programming is not easy. So this technology is going to make it easy for programmers to make their stuff make use of all those extra cores. And that's a good thing for the future, because right now we have two cores, which isn't too much. But, you know, the way things are going, we're going to see 4, 8, 16 cores most probably. So if programs don't use them, then we're not going to go forward because the cores aren't really getting much faster. We're still running at 2-3 gigahertz, and we have been for years.
Now, forgive me for being skeptical at this point, but I remember going to a conference in, I believe it was 1995 or 1996, where one of the big software companies that I was working with announced that by spring of the following year, they would have threaded libraries that would allow them to address multiple processors.
Yeah, there's only one way we'll know if it works, and that's if it works.
Yeah,
but it certainly sounds like their head is pointing in the right direction.
I guess so, but everybody's been yapping about it for so long. I don't know if I believe it's ever going to get here.
Well, that's true. The other interesting thing, because as well as getting more and more cores, our GPUs are getting more and more powerful all the time.
GPU is?
So your graphics card, basically. Okay. The graphics processing unit. Mm-hmm. So we're actually heading towards yet another core, really, because they're getting very powerful. So they're also introducing support for a pre-existing technology, which basically allows you to send regular ordinary calculations at the GPU when it's not busy being a GPU.
Now, that's not unique to Apple, though. I've heard that from Intel's been working on that for a while, right?
Yeah, this is an extension to the C programming language, which they're incorporating into Snow Leopard. So they're bringing in support
again.
For it at the core level.
Before we started recording, you called it Snow Leopard, and you just called it Snow Leopard again.
Oops, Snow Leopard. Anyway,
if it's slow, now we know where the nickname came from. Bart started it.
That's it. So that's sort of forward-looking anyway. They certainly have their head in the right direction. What we do know that we are getting as regular, ordinary users is we're getting native Microsoft Exchange support out of the box, which certainly seems to me to be a big deal for people in the enterprise, or at least those people in the enterprise unfortunate enough to be using Exchange.
I don't know. There's things worse than Exchange. Don't be smacking down Exchange.
I am delighted to say that we do not have Exchange at work. Because I have to look after that kind of stuff.
Well, we have something
worse. Sun Microsystems have a beautiful system that we use, and I love it to bits.
Okay.
Anyway, that's a side note. The other thing we're getting is a new version of QuickTime, which is called QuickTime X. So they seem to be skipping a few numbers there, because we're on 7.5 now. So 8 and 9 have just been lost.
Hmm.
Apparently, this is going to be way more efficient. It sounds like they're rewriting it from the ground up, to be perfectly honest. And it's no harm because QuickTime is far too old and full of far too much legacy code. Apparently they did a major, major rewrite on it for the iPod Touch and the iPhone. And so now they're porting it from the iPod Touch and the iPhone back to the real Mac. Oh. So that's interesting. And the other thing we're getting
maybe
is
back
Safari
to the real
4.
PC too.
I would imagine so. Yeah, yeah. I would imagine because that's one of their cross-platform products. So I,
now,
guess
I hope
it has
they're
going to
bring a bunch of QuickTime vulnerabilities in when they do that, though. They're going to keep those, right?
Yeah, what else would we have to talk about?
Right.
Speaking of which,
NTSB
I hope you've all
attacks.
Upgraded to 7.5 because there's a major bunch of security problems patched.
Oh, I haven't Shocker. Done it yet. Oh, I promise, today.
Yeah, honestly, I really would. In Microsoft world, we now have, you know the way that Microsoft call it Patch Tuesday, where right. The first Tuesday of every month is Patch Tuesday, and they issue all their patches. The security researchers have now come up with a new nickname. Was it not exploitation? Yeah, Exploitation Thursday, where basically all the patches that are fixed on the Tuesday are actually being exploited by the Thursday.
Jeez.
So if you do not update within the first day or two, you are exceptionally vulnerable.
I know this is off topic, but why did Apple change recently, like in right around the time Leopard came out, that every time you do an update, though, you have to reboot the system? You didn't used to have to do that.
It's only for some updates, because I updated three things yesterday I didn't have to reboot.
Okay, well, it seems like almost every time I get a set of updates, one of them in there causes a full reboot, and I don't like that.
Well, anything that affects the kernel needs a reboot.
Well, stop affecting the kernel then. I mean, they didn't used to affect the kernel, though. You never had to reboot.
Yeah, but a lot of this stuff that they're fixing is really, really core to the OS, and it's constantly loaded in RAM, so you can't patch it live, really. There's one operating system that can do that, which is Solaris. I don't know how it does it, but it manages to swap its own kernel without rebooting.
Well, back in the Tiger days, I actually ran an experiment to see how long I could run my Mac without rebooting, and I went 90 days. So cool. I know that in 90 days, all of the patches that I applied never required me to do a reboot. Now, the last 3 days got really, really weird. Like, the Finder wasn't running at all for the last 3 days, but I wanted to see how long I could run in using the command line to, and I actually learned how to install software and stuff, because I'm not going to go 3 whole days without installing software. So, yeah, it was really fun. It was a crazy experiment. But after 90 days, I was like, okay, I'm sick of this, and rebooted.
Yeah.
way off.
Anyway,
what else?
Before, yeah. So the last thing, which is purely based on rumor, it has to be said, this is not official. This has not been confirmed by Apple or denied by Apple. But someone leaked a screenshot which purports to be the system specs for the developer preview version of Snow Leopard. And it quite clearly says Intel only.
Mm.
Now, two things here. It may just be the preview release that's Intel only, and the whole thing may be a fake.
So in statistics, when you start multiplying probabilities, we get down to maybe 25% chance possibility of that being true, maybe?
Well, apart from the fact that it's somewhat logical, because Apple are not going to keep supporting the PowerPC ad infinitum.
Sure, that makes sense.
And since Leopard is going to be with us for quite a few years yet in terms of, you know, security patches and stuff, I mean, it's only a month or two ago that I saw the last patch to 10.3.
Hmm.
So there is a legitimate point to be made. Snow Leopard brings in very few new features for the end user. Then G5 people can just keep using Leopard because it has all the fancy, shiny features anyway.
Well, that's fine.
So I actually wouldn't be even remotely surprised if they tell us, you know, in the next month or two that, oh, by the way, it's Intel only. And the reason they wouldn't have told us this at WWDC is because they do not want to take any of the news headlines away from the iPhone.
The blessed iPhone. Of course not.
Yeah. Had they turned around and said, oh, by the by, it's Intel only, that would have been the headline on all the Apple sites rather than what they want. So Apple are fantastic at playing the media. So I would not be even remotely shocked if the next time we hear about 10.6 is at Macworld in January, and that Steve gives us a preview and shows us all its shininess and then drops the bombshell that it's Intel only.
Yeah, I could see that happening. Hey, I cut you off when we were talking about QuickTime. Is there some sort of change coming to Safari also?
Yeah, Safari 4, basically faster, quicker, better. I think that sums it up. There's some sort of new JavaScript engine coming. They had the name of it. It's a funny name that sounds like a fish. apparently, it's great. Well, no, they're talking about it. 100% compliance with ACID 3 tests and, you know, insanely fast benchmarks. So
they always claim that, though.
They do, but the ACID-3, you can't fake that, because anyone can run the ACID-3 test themselves. So if they say 100% compliance on ACID-3, it has to be 100% compliance, because otherwise it'll take about 5 minutes for someone to call them up on that.
Oh, okay, but I mean the faster part. I mean, they're always saying it's the fastest browser in the universe by 82% and things like that, and I flip back and forth between Safari and Firefox, and I can't tell the difference, so...
No, I mean, there's a certain point where it doesn't matter. Yeah. I mean, if it's five times faster than half a second, it's irrelevant.
Right, right.
You know, there is a point where it ceases to matter. But anyway, that's sort of where we stand with Snow Leopard. We have very little information, but what we have is interesting. And the name Snow Leopard sort of sounds like a cleaner, shinier version of a leopard.
Yeah, but maybe not a whole different cat.
Not that different. Yeah, exactly. Not a whole different cat. I think it's a very smart name.
Okay. As long as they don't charge me $100 for the same cat in a different color, maybe I'd like it.
Yeah, but it may yet, I mean, although it's not going to have much on the user end, they're talking about it significantly reducing its footprint.
Uh-huh.
In other words, making it way smaller on your disk. One of the press releases had that line in it, you know, leaving you more room for your music and your photos, which I kind of like, because Leopard is bloaty. I think they're trying to differentiate themselves from Vista. And I think Microsoft need to take heed of this and release, you know, a Snow Vista.
That would be nice. Well,
they're selling it as the foundation for all future ones. So I also wouldn't be surprised if they abandon Carbon and make it Cocoa only, abandon the PowerPC, make it Intel only, and really lay a solid foundation that they're going to build on for the next couple of cats. Although they're running out of cats. They may have to change the dogs or something.
Well, they haven't done Ocelot yet, right?
They haven't done Ocelot, and everyone keeps on wanting an Ocelot. I think it's a terrible sounding name, but anyway.
All right, so let's see. We had one last thing on the agenda here. You took a look at a tool called Bokeh. Bokeh?
B-O-K-E-H. Yes. You kindly asked them for a free key so that I could review it, and they kindly obliged, so thank you, and thank them. This program, right, the whole thing... Bokeh is a Japanese word which photographers use to describe that nice, fuzzy, out-of-focus look you get on good photographs behind the subject.
Right. Oh.
Photographers obsess about getting a nice bokeh.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know that. I love that look.
Oh, it's fantastic, and that's what it's called. But they've based their entire application around this obscure photography metaphor. And I think that's stupid.
I wanted to make sure we had it spelled here so people can find it. It's B-O-K-E-H.
Yeah, I think it's bokehapp.com.
Right.
It seems to be the fashion these days to put app at the end of your application's website.
Okay.
Right. This has nothing to do with photography at all. Right? Now, okay, so the idea about this application is it lets you reclaim CPU cycles. I'm actually using it as we speak. As a sort of a half test, really.
Okay.
So sometimes you have programs that are absolute gobblers of resources, and you just want to stop them in their tracks for a moment while you do something else. Good example of this would be Firefox if it has a bunch of Flash things open in a bunch of tabs.
Oh, yeah.
Flash is a hog. Animated GIFs, Firefox makes an awful dog's dinner of them. Hog, hog, hog. So if you have Firefox open with 10 tabs and 3 or 4 of them have Flash, that is easily taking up 20-odd% of your CPU, most probably. Certainly if you're running a G4, it's probably taking up 50. So with Bokeh, you click on this little, it's in the menu bar, so you click on this little icon, it gives you a list of all the running programs, and you click it, and it pauses it. It simply stops it in its tracks, stops it getting any CPU.
So you can pause individual applications just to say you stop taking any processing power, you don't have to turn them all off?
Exactly. So okay. You pause, you can choose to pause individual apps, and when you pause them, they go out of focus. Literally, there is a blur effect applied to them. Hence, we're getting back to the metaphor very slightly and very slowly. The other thing that fits in with the metaphor is that the icon in the menu bar is that little tulip that you get for the macro setting on most cameras.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And there is actually an option in the preferences, and there's very, very few options. It's the most pathetic-looking preferences screen I've ever seen in terms of its weeness. But in there, nonetheless, is probably the most useless option on the planet. It's an option to make your thingy make a camera noise every time you pause an application.
That's not an important feature to you then?
No, the whole thing is built around this metaphor, which makes sense to about 1% of the population. Now, the concept of a metaphor is to help people understand your program. That's where we get desktops, files, and folders from. And
okay.
This is the inverse. This is an in-joke, which as a photographer, I find great. I get it. it does not help ordinary people one iota. In fact, it's quite confusing.
Okay.
So I think that's a mistake on their part.
Just anyway. The camera part. I mean, the idea of focus, that's kind of coming out to me. Now I'm going to remember the term bokeh as a result.
Okay, so you've learned some photography.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm entirely sure that's the point of the app.
So like you could have called it focus.
Yeah, I don't know. There's just got to be a better way to do it. To me, it's an in-joke rather than an actually useful metaphor. Anyway, so it lets you pause individual apps, which is useful, but it also has an even, well, potentially more useful function in that there's another option that says focus on your current app, and that pauses everything except your current app. So they all go fuzzy.
Okay.
And that's what I've done at the moment. So I currently have loads and loads of stuff open. I have NetNewsWire open. I have Firefox open with a rake of tabs. I have iPhoto open. I have iTunes open. I have ImageWell open. I have Preview open. I have Mars Edit open.
Wow.
I have a Fluid app for Flickr open. And I have Skype open. So I have loads of stuff open. But I focused on Skype, and Skype has no issue whatsoever. It has all the CPU it wants. And it's working away quite happily, as you can hear.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic.
So normally, because they always say, don't run other applications while you're running Skype or the quality will be terrible. So shut down everything. That's an awful pain.
Yeah.
Do I have to? So with Bokeh, you just don't shut it down. You just pause it. Out of your way, do your Skype recording. When you're done, unpause it. Away you go.
Can you tell
also,
with anything like Activity Monitor or any of those tools, can you tell that it really is giving you all the processor power?
If you run menu meters, they'd keep running because menu bar apps keep running. So if you ran menu meters, you could see.
Okay. So you can go up to the menu meters and see that your processor's
your CPU,
going straight to that.
Yeah. The other thing is if you're doing something like video editing, or Steve would find this quite handy, actually, video editing or maybe work in iPhoto or Aperture or something, you can focus it all on that and you'll notice snappier work on your iPhoto.
Now,
is
it just the CPU power, or is it also the memory?
Well, no, it can't free up that memory, but your machine takes care of that by itself. Stuff you don't use gets paged out to disk.
That's right. Yeah.
So very, very quickly, you'll have everything in RAM will be what you need. And since nothing will be moving in and out of RAM, what you need will stay in memory instead of paged.
Okay.
So it's functional. It functions well, but it certainly has rough edges. Okay. The first thing is when you actually click on the menu bar Tulip for the first time, it doesn't show you, it's not clear what it does. It actually looks like an application launcher because you click on it and you get a list of applications.
Okay.
Once you pause an application, a symbol appears next to the app that is the two parallel bars. And you say, that application is paused.
Right.
If they were to have a play sign there the first time you do it, it will be much clearer what all this is about.
Oh, okay.
So I certainly would recommend that in their next version that they always have a symbol next to the application.
Okay.
The other rough edge, which really annoys me actually, is what happens to system events while you're focused on a single app. And basically, they appear not to happen. If I hit Command Tab now, nothing will happen.
Oh.
Because the Finder is paused.
Oh.
If I then hit F12 to bring up a dashboard, nothing will happen. If I then hit Control Arrow Key to move spaces, nothing will happen.
Well, what
the
would
moment
you have to
I
do
defocus,
instead?
You can't do these things while you're focused.
Right, but so, what would you have them do instead? Those things are paused. How could they come up?
Well, I don't think they should be pausing bits of the actual OS.
Huh.
Okay, because what happens is the moment you hit defocus, they all happen at once.
Okay.
So if you've done 10 things, right?
Those commands are buffered up, so it's flipping spaces.
Those commands are all buffered up,
apps.
So if they actually made them go away, that would be a lot more useful than having them all just barf out at once.
I see.
I didn't realize this, and I have hot corners set up. And so over an hour, I will accidentally move the mouse into corners a few times. Mm-hmm. And since nothing happens, I don't think anything's happened. Until I unfreeze the app, and suddenly 20 things happen at once. I go, So that's a rough edge for sure. Probably the most ironic bug, because I thought this would be fantastic for my old G4, because it's an old machine. So it has very little CPU to work with. Well, the actual drawing of the blur takes up so much CPU that if you do anything that involves moving a window, Bokeh just grinds your whole machine to an unbearable halt.
Hmm.
So if you're focused on, say, Firefox, And so you're focused on Firefox, so everything else is paused. That means that your desktop is blurred. You're going to move the Firefox window, and it is as if you're running Leopard on, like, you know, a 386.
Oh, wow.
The whole thing just grinds to a complete and utter halt.
So maybe if they had a feature to say, okay, cut the cute graphics of making it look fuzzy, that would be, yeah, that'd be a good feature. Or auto-sensing that it was a slow machine and not doing it, something like that.
Yeah, I think so. It definitely needs something like that, because the machine that it should be best on is the machine it's worst on. It's fantastic on the MacBook Pro. It really isn't that much use on the G4. Now, what is still useful is to freeze individual apps. So Firefox, be as I say, being a complete and utter hog, it is actually useful to just freeze Firefox when you're not using it. But as long as that, if you minimize the window first so that it doesn't have to draw any fuzz, drawing fuzz bad. You want to avoid it having to draw any fuzz.
Okay, so just a preference that says, you know, don't do the fuzz part.
Yeah, disable the fancy graphics in some way. Absolutely, okay. That would make a phenomenally big difference.
Okay.
The other thing is, this thing is Leopard only. Mm-hmm. So it relies on fancy cool stuff in Leopard, but it is incompatible with Spaces. So if you focus on an app that has windows in multiple spaces, you cannot get at those other windows.
Well, but you've... Oh, I see what you're saying. So if I've just said... To focus on Safari, and I need to get to a Safari window in a different space, I can't get there.
Exactly.
Okay.
Until you unfocus, and then you'll get there twice or three times.
Because you asked for it so many times, right?
Yeah. Yeah. As invariably happens. So that's a little disappointing, because it's Leopard only, so it really should work well with the Leopard features. But I have no... I mean, this is a fairly new and recent app, so I have no doubt that, you know, the guys writing it can make it... You know, these are just rough edges. They can be smoothed off. None of these things are showstoppers. And the thing costs $17, which for us people in Euroland is a tenner. You know? So for the money, it's fantastic. You know? So, and I'm assuming that we'll get free upgrades to 1.2. I think it's at version 1.1 at the moment. So I'm assuming they wouldn't be bold enough to charge us for minor little updates. So as they knock out, as they round off these little rough edges, I think, you know, it'll get better. So even now, it's worth £17.
Well, that sounds great. Now I'm jealous that I let you have it.
I'm sure some kind user will send you $17 on PayPal.
There you go. All right. Well, this has been really cool. For a tiny little app that does one little thing, it is pretty interesting. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a neat little idea. It needs a bit of work, but it's a very neat little idea. And the bottom line is it works, which is always important, because if you have an app that does one thing but it doesn't do it well, then it's pretty useless.
All right. Well, so one more time, that's Boca from BocaApp.com.
That's the one. And thank you, Boca App, for letting me have a free copy.
All right, Bart. Well, I think that's probably going to wind it up. We've managed to hit the 30-minute mark here on our 15-minute podcast segment.
Like I say, we redefined the minute to 120 seconds, so we're bang on time. Anyway, until next time, happy computing.
Well, I'm sad to say it's time to end the show for today. Thanks for all the kind words about podcasting on podcasting. Keep up the feedback. I've gotten some good feedback and I've gotten some bad feedback, and I read it all and I really take it seriously. You can really help change the way the show goes. Well, keep up that feedback and for this show by sending email to allison@podfeet.com. Don't forget to add me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. And if that's not enough ways to communicate, send me an audio file over at nosillacast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.